Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. It's the best time of the year. We've got the playoffs in mid-swing. We've got the NBA lottery here in a few weeks. Everybody's engaged. Go get yourself a subscription. With me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. And Alex, we are joined by Antonio Daniels, the fourth pick in the 1997 NBA draft and the current television color analyst for the New Orleans Pelicans on Bally Sports New Orleans and the co-host and analyst on Sirius XM Radio. AD, what's up, man?
What up, Andrew? How you doing, Alex? Nice to meet you, brother.
Nice to meet you, too.
So it's been such an interesting season. One, I want to know how much you think your turtlenecks really turned things around for New Orleans. I looked for a turtleneck to wear today, but I couldn't. I'm not as stylish as you are.
Oh, man. I'm a superstitious person.
Yeah.
By nature. I was superstitious as a player. And this year, you know, it was a point kind of early in the season. As you know, this team started 3-16.
Yep.
And I remember there was a game or two or three where I wore a turtleneck and they won all three games.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the players started to notice, the fans started to notice. I used to talk to Griff about it all the time. And then I eventually end up talking to the players about it. And they're basically like, look, man, you got to rock this for the rest of the season. You know, like, so some of them were superstitious right along with me. So
yeah.
It really took off. And, you know, there were people that were giving me turtlenecks for free. You know, now so I can awesome. Tell you this. I can tell you this, Andrew. I can tell you this, Alex. I literally have every color turtleneck. You name it, I got it. Red, maroon, pink, gray, green, yellow, white, orange. You name it, I have it.
That's your thing now. Just out of curiosity, what were some of the things that you did superstitiously as a player?
Well, as a player, it all depended on how I played.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So I was superstitious in that way, in the form of, you know, if I played a good game, even though I had a shoe deal for the first 7 years of my career, I was with Nike. For the next six, I was with Adidas. So you obviously you have a number of shoes at your disposal. If I was playing well, I would not change shoes.
Yeah.
I would keep those shoes if I was playing well. The moment that I had a bad game, even if I wore those shoes for one game, throw them in the trash.
Yeah.
Throw them in the trash. Get rid of them. Give them away. Get them out of my sight. If I ate something, whatever I ate, I would try and repeat the same thing for the next game. I don't know. Obviously, it doesn't matter. It's not like, you know, you're playing well for the shoes you have on, or you're playing well because of what you ate, or the fact that you took the same exact road to the game. Yeah. Every day, but that's just a mental thing that I had going with me.
So let's go back to the beginning of the season. You mentioned that the Pelicans got off to this 3-16 start. At that point, mm-hmm. no one nationally was thinking playoffs for this team. But were there any signs, even in those early days, that made you feel like something special could be happening?
I have a tweet that I have bookmarked on November 5th. Believe it is, November 5th. And I was on the pregame show, the Pels pregame show with David Wesley and Aaron Hartigan. And we are talking about that. And I said at that time, I promise you, when this team gets healthy and they get it together, they will be a playoff team. I said it then.
Wow.
The thing is, as opposed to believing in the players, I believed in the coach. I saw how Willie Green responded when this team was 3-16. They say the true testament of man is shown during times of adversity. And when this team was really struggling, Willie Green was the most optimistic, positive, and full of energy coach I've ever seen during a time like that. It's contagious. It is contagious. There's nowhere else for this team to go but up. Walking into shootarounds at that time, when this team was 3-16, and the shootarounds were spirited. I have been on bad teams. I know what it's like to go into a shootaround when you are lost 5, 6, 7 games in a row. It was, this was not normal what I was seeing during shootaround. Guys are high-fiving each other. Guys are running around, smacking with each other, playing with each other. The music is playing. They're chanting during shooting games. There was a different sort of spirit that was present when this team was 3-16. That can only translate to positive results. And for me, it all started at the top at Willie Green, because he never blinked. He never doubted when this team was at its lowest.
I love that you brought him up, because after game 6 in New Orleans, you know, we saw a really emotional Willie Green in the post-game scene. It was kind of a bittersweet ending for him going against his former team. It ended up being this transformative year for the franchise. When people talk about culture change with like a new coach or new GM, you think back of all the roster turnover over the last couple of years, the drama with Zion, the coaching changes. What about him as a person made him the perfect choice to change the culture of this franchise?
Well, one, I think you have to have a coach in today's NBA. There's nothing, in my opinion, more important than a coach's ability to relate to this generation. I think that's incredibly important. I don't care about your defensive schemes. I don't care about your X's and O's. As a coach in this generation, they need to know that you care about them and you can relate to them. So if you go back and you look at Willie's career, this is why I honestly say I feel that the best coaches are role players. No disrespect to the greats of all time. But when you're a role player, you can relate to everybody up and down that bench, 1 through 15. Because Willie was a starter. Willie came off the bench as a sixth man. He came off the bench where his minutes weren't guaranteed or consistent. And there was also a point where his minute, he didn't play at all. So tell me who on that roster he can't relate to. His ability to communicate with his players. Like, I have seen Willie get after players in a way where they don't feel like they are being disciplined, as opposed to just chopping them down and beating. This generation responds different. And as a coach in this generation, you have to evolve, mainly in your ability to communicate and connect to these guys. And Willie will talk at length about what he learned from Monty Williams as far as communication is concerned, what he learned from Steve Kerr as far as communication is concerned. So he took some of Monty, some of Steve Kerr, and I had an opportunity to be with this team from day one of training camp, every practice, every shoot around, on the plane, on the bus, brunch, and see Willie up close and personal communicate to his players in a way that makes them confident and makes them the best version of themselves. He is an inspirational person. Like, he is the type of guy that makes you want to be a better person.
Wow. So after a 3-16 start, the Pelicans went on to finish 35-28 and were 11-6 in their final 17 games. And looking back, what were a couple of the key factors that helped the Pelicans make such a dramatic turnaround?
Well, I think it's a number of different things that you can look at. I feel like anytime you are in a position of success or you're experiencing success, there has to be a culture of guys outplaying their expectation, of overachievement, so to speak, you know, of guys doing things that's not expected of them. No one expected Jose Alvarado to have the impact that he had. Yeah. No one expected Herb Jones, who was the 35th pick of the draft, to be on someone's first or second team all defensive team. You know what I mean? There aren't nine better defenders in this league than Herb Jones. You know, Jackson Hayes going into the starting lineup. Brandon Ingram taking the proverbial step, not in the sense of scoring, but in the leadership role and his ability to facilitate that basketball. And lastly, the acquisition of C.J. McCollum, and not just C.J. McCollum. That's what's talked about a lot. Larry Nance was in that deal as well.
Yeah.
You know, so when you put all these things together and when you start out 3-16, the thing you have to understand is there was a lot of change that took place. There's a lot of change in the offseason. Think about how this team looks this year for day one of training camp and how this team looked last year, from the coach to the coaching staff, all the way down to Jonas Valanciunas, Devontae Graham, Herb Jones, Jose Alvarado. Go down the different list of guys that were a part of this roster this year that wasn't there last year. So there is a piece of patience that comes into it, but the acquisition of guys and getting used to one another. I'll say this ad nauseum. I've never seen a locker room like this. I've never seen a locker room like this. I played 4 years in San Antonio, and that was a veteran-led locker room, which is full of optimism. But when you have guys that are competing with each other as far as internal competition is concerned, and they are really pulling for each other, that's why I can see Willie crying like he did yesterday. The emotion that he showed after the game yesterday, because this journey has been a special one from where this team started to where they eventually ended.
You mentioned Herb Jones, who, like you said, was a second round pick, you know, wasn't this high profile draft prospect. He comes in, he becomes a defensive star. He ends up playing almost 38 minutes a game in that first round series in the playoffs. Rookies are typically never this good defensively right out of the gate.
Right.
Watching in real time, how surprising was his development to you? Or did you see it from day one?
You saw it from day one. I'm not going to lie. You saw it in training camp. And I remember the day that I walked into training camp, there's an assistant coach named Brandon. Be Great is what we call him. He told me at that time, the guy that is going to surprise everybody, AD, keep your eye on Herb Jones. That's what he told me at that time. I'm talking about day one of training camp. And I kind of looked at him sideways like, okay, well, if that's what you say. And I told him midway through the season, boy, you were spot on. You were spot on. I can't think of the last rookie that I've seen that has been this far ahead of the curve as far as defensive understanding, defensive knowledge, understanding his personnel, defensive instincts, all of these different things that you put in the category. Because as we all know, rookies struggle on the defensive side of the ball more than anything else. Because in college, you don't have defensive schemes and rotations, and guys aren't this fast, this strong, this athletic. So it's this huge difference from college to the pros as far as adjusting to the speed of the game. And a lot of times when rookies come up to this level, they don't play because of their lack of understanding on the defensive side of the ball. Herb Jones wasn't that dude. Second game of the season. Think of the amount of confidence that Willie Green had to have in him to say, hey, you know what? We're playing the Chicago Bulls. I'm going to start you today on Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
And you go from Zach LaVine to LeBron, and from LeBron to Luka, and then from Luka to Steph Curry, from Steph Curry to Donovan Mitchell, from Donovan Mitchell to Chris Paul and Devin Booker. He was just all year long. The young man was amazing. And I can sit here now that the season is over and say exactly what I told you guys a little while back. You will not find 10 guys or 9 guys in the NBA that are better and more versatile defenders than Herb Jones is. He needs to be on somebody's first or second team all defense. No, I'm not talking about rookie. I'm talking about NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. He was unbelievable. Just and his length and athleticism. Like he's just going to get better as a defender. Like he's that's a future defensive player of the year candidate, like easily.
Agreed.
So,
and, you know, the thing is you can have a wingspan. You can have a wingspan, you can have speed, you can have agility, you can have athleticism, but to know how to use them defensively is a little bit different, and he's got it.
Mm-hmm. So we got to talk about Zion, who he was seen on the sidelines during the playoffs. We even saw a few dunks from him on video over the past few weeks. From your vantage point, do you feel that situation has improved over the past few months now that he's back with the team? And, you know, present with them, are you feeling, you know, positive about his future with New Orleans?
I feel great about his future. I've said this on numerous platforms. I feel great about his future. And let me rephrase. I feel great about his future here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love the approach that David Griffin, Trajan Langdon, Swin Cash, and Coach Willie Green took. You know, sometimes you have to keep a player from himself. But I'll say this as well, though. The thing that we have to understand, we live in such a social media driven world.
Yeah.
Because a guy can dunk doesn't mean he's ready to go. Those are two different things. So when the dunk came out, all you heard was people saying at that time, we'll put him on the floor. That's not how the NBA works.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it works. You know, it's a lot more involved. Like, that's why you constantly hear the definition of ramping up. That's why you hear that. Just because a guy can dunk a basketball doesn't mean that he's ready to go out there and play 30 to 40 minutes a night or even 15 to 20 minutes a night. Sometimes you have to keep an athlete from himself. And I love the fact that the Pelicans were looking long term with Zion as opposed to short term.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the city itself, because I feel like New Orleans as an NBA city gets disrespected more than a lot of no other question. Cities. I mean, no mm-hmm. other city gets talked about in terms of like relocation on national platforms more than New Orleans. Could you talk a little bit about the connection between this team and this city? Because it seems like the type of team that creates new fans because it's such an exciting team.
So think about the amount of fans that became New Orleans Pelicans fans over the 6-game playoff series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It's easy to root for a team when you can look at that team and see a reflection of yourself. You know, you notice that a lot of times super teams aren't rooted for. You know what I mean? Like, I've heard so many people say, never have I been more of a Boston Celtic fan because they wanted them to beat Brooklyn. Yeah. You know why? Because Brooklyn has Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and they traded for James Harden and then Ben Simmons. When you look at a team like the New Orleans Pelicans, it is a team full of, one, overachievers, and two, a team that is built with guys with chips on their shoulders because they've been given up on by other organizations. So when you look at that, it's a reflection of you. And that's what I've said about this team all year long. This team is a reflection of this beautiful city. Think of all the adversity that New Orleans as a city has gone through, that New Orleanians have seen and gone through, and not just seen and gone through, what they have bounced back from. Whether it's Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Ida, the tornadoes, whatever it may be. The term catastrophic has become ideal here in New Orleans. But you know what these people do? They are resilient. They don't quit. They're blue collar. They continue to work to get things back to normalcy. And that's what you've seen out of the team this season. When you start 3-16 and everybody's talking about how bad the situation is and the team needs to be relocated, and what if Anthony Davis left and Chris Paul left, is Zion left next to leave? What does CJ McCollum want to go to New Orleans? All this other kind of stuff. And then you end up responding the way that you respond. I think that's the reflection of a lot of our lives.
Yeah.
A lot of us have always heard from day one, you can't, you can't, you won't, you shouldn't, have been given up on. And when you look on that floor and see guys like Jose Alvarado, you see guys like Herb Jones, you know, you see these kind of guys that are outplaying their expectation against all odds. How can you not afford to be a fan of this team?
Yeah, they were so much fun to watch.
80's got me fired up this morning.
I know. I'll tell you, I miss having AD in Oklahoma City. We had you as an analyst in Oklahoma City for a while, mm-hmm. and dude, there's no replacement for you. Like we miss you here, and it's been really cool to watch anytime, because I've got league pass. Anytime that there's a Pelicans game mm-hmm. on, I always flip on your broadcast every single time, because it's one of
the
best.
I'll say this, Andrew. I had such a and developed. Such a connection to the fans in OKC, mm-hmm. Even though I wasn't there, you know, just right. being the in-studio analyst. Obviously, Michael Cage is the color analyst,
yep.
you know, so just having an opportunity to really tap into the OKC fan base and the amount of love and support that they've always shown me mm-hmm. from day one, that fan base embraced me like crazy.
Yep.
To the point, even when I left and took the job in New Orleans, I would have felt it would have done them a disservice to not thank each and every one of them via social media the way I did.
Yeah.
You know, I literally love the fan base in OKC and the amount of love that they showed me. All I can say is the love, the support, the appreciation is 100% mutual.
Yeah. Love it. We got to talk about Brandon Ingram before we go. Still only 24 years old. He's getting better. He's becoming one of the top tier players in the NBA, like right before our eyes. His passing has improved. What other improvements did you see from him this season? Because his stats stay pretty steady through the years, but he's clearly a better player. And what is it that you've seen that has made him better this year?
I tell you this, I've never seen him happier.
Hmm.
I've never seen him smile this much. If you go back and you look through Pale social media, look at the amount of pictures of Brandon Ingram smiling and having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And he did an interview earlier this year, like toward the end of the season, with Aaron Summers. And he told her at that time, I haven't had this much fun playing basketball since I was playing AAU in high school.
Wow.
So when I talk about the connection that this team has in the locker room, it's special. Hmm. It's not normal. It is not normal. And B.I., Willie Green does such a fantastic job of empowering others. And that is a humble trait of his. Mm-hmm. You know, during training camp, he empowered his coaches, whether it's Jaren Collins, Fred Vincent, Teresa Weatherspoon, Casey Hill. He empowered other coaches to lead practice. And this year, I saw him give a different piece of responsibility by empowering Brandon Ingram. And no disrespect to Stan Van Gundy or Alvin Gentry, mm-hmm. None of them. But there was a different connection that Brandon Ingram had with Willie Green. And if you listen to the sound bites throughout the course of the season, you can hear it. I've seen it. I've seen it up close and personal. The different connection that they have as far as communication was concerned. So, yeah, we can talk about B.I. in between the four lines. We can talk about the fact of what we just saw in this playoff series, the fact that he's an all-star, most improved player, so on and so forth. To me, I think the biggest, I guess, jump that I saw with Brandon Ingram was outside those four lines. Hmm. It was with his connection with the coach, who empowered him to be a quiet leader. Willie Green is a servant leader. He is such a servant leader in his ability to empower other people. And he doesn't get threatened by that. He has no problem allowing B.I. to be the best version of himself. To see the connection between that star player and that coach, I think for me, that was the biggest thing and the biggest jump that I saw in Brandon Ingram was in his personality and his love for being here in New Orleans.
Thank you so much, AD, for joining us on the Saturday Slam and Jam today. Be sure, if you're tuning into the Pelicans next season, tune into their broadcast because it's outstanding. Thanks so much, Antonio.
For sure. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate you, Alex. God bless you guys.
Okay, Al, we're back from that break, and we've got my guy, Eric Name. He's Bucks beat writer for The Athletic here to talk about the Bucks. Eric, what's up, man?
Just chilling, man. You know, getting ready for another series. Maybe, you know, I was just talking to Jay King, our Celtics writer, and I said this might just be the Eastern Conference Finals. So let's see.
Yeah, it kind of does feel like that. The Bucks are matching up with the Celtics for the third time since 2018. The 2018 first round series went 7 in favor of Boston. The Bucks won the 19 Eastern Conference semis against Boston in 5. I heard J.E. Skeets ask this question on No Dunks the other day, and I was curious what you think. With all their recent history, is there a rivalry that exists between these two teams?
No, I don't think so. I think too much has changed, like where, you know, Kyrie Irving isn't with the Celtics anymore. You know, Horford was with the Celtics, then not with the Celtics, now back with the Celtics. And I just don't think there's like enough carryover to really feel it, because when the Bucks lost, that was the final year of Jason Kidd. When they won, it was the first year of Mike Budenholzer. And that was the final year of Kyrie Irving. And it felt like that whole series was about Kyrie Irving and him and Boston and all of that. So now that he's not there anymore, it feels like a totally different team in Boston, or at least in my opinion.
Yeah. It's just so funny because I mean, like, we always try to think in terms of like, how do we get these rivalries? Well, you just play in the playoffs years and, you know, several years in a row. And like, we've had that. And it's like, it doesn't feel that way at all.
Nope. Not in any way.
So in round one, the Bucks seemed to answer some defensive questions. They held the Bulls to an offensive rating of 95, which is worst among all playoff teams. Part of the success in round one came from using this jumbo lineup with Giannis, Portis, and Lopez. Do you think that lineup can be effective against Boston, who so far have had the second best offense in the playoffs?
Whew. To me, that's the question that lingers over the entire series. Because if you're the Bucks, all year long, they've put Jrue Holiday on Jason Tatum. So Holiday-Tatum has been the matchup there. Then you're going to be looking at Wesley Matthews and Jaylen Brown. And then in an ideal world, you're able to put Bobby Portis on Robert Williams or Al Horford, or I guess Daniel Tice, if it ends up being Daniel Tice. I know there's Robert Williams questions. Then Brooke Lopez on the other big guy. And then Giannis on Marcus Smart. That's how the Bucks have treated Marcus Smart for years now. Marcus Smart takes more threes against the Bucks than anybody else. I think it's 30 threes he took in four games this year, and that's including a game where it wasn't very close, and I think he played like something like 25 minutes or something like that. So this is what the Bucks do. They try to be big. They try to bait the Celtics into having non-Jason Tatum players take a bunch of shots. They try to bait you into having your mediocre shooters take threes. This is pretty basic Bucks DNA strategy tactics for the last, I mean, since Mike Budenholzer has been here. And to me, it's going to come down to, can the Celtics get away with putting one of the wings on Portis? In the Bulls series, the Bulls tried DeMar DeRozan on Bobby for maybe 2 minutes. And in those 2 minutes, the Bucks said, okay, cool. Bobby, go on the block. And they gave it to Bobby on the block. And Bobby Portis, before he got to Milwaukee, was known as, this dude's going to get buckets. Bobby Buckets, yeah. that's who he is. And he said, oh, DeMar DeRozan, you're tough, you're strong, I don't care. I'm 6'10", 250 pounds. And he's got a back down game where it's like three very slow dribbles and he gets to a right-hand hook in the middle of the lane, puts it in. And if you take that away, then it's a turnaround jumper over the right shoulder. And that goes in at a very high rate. If that is what happens against the Celtics really have to rethink how they're going to defend the Bucks entirely. Because the Bucks are comfortable with Giannis on Smart and their two big guys on the Celtics, two big guys. If Jason Tatum can cover Bobby Portis, then the Bucks got to rethink the jumbo lineup and they got to rethink kind of everything that they're doing. Like how much Bobby Portis can stay on the floor, I think, is massive to this series. And we've seen it go a couple ways. In the finals against the Suns, he played an awful lot and the Bucks had a lot of trust in him. Against the Nets, Bobby Portis was out of the rotation because they couldn't trust him because the Nets would just target him on defense. And to me, I don't want to say that's the whole series, but it's a whole lot of it. Because if you're dictating the terms and you get the Bucks out of playing big, which they love playing big. If you get them out of that and force them to play small without Chris Middleton, there's a lot of holes in their coverage, whether that's switching, whether that's playing straight up, whatever it may be. Like, this is a Bucks team without Chris Middleton that needs to play big.
So for the Celtics, the story of their first round series was how well they defended Kevin Durant, who shot 39% in a sweep. Boston seems to be built to handle a lot of different defensive assignments, but Giannis presents like way more challenges or different challenges than Kevin Durant. Do you have any expectations for how Boston will try to guard Giannis to start the series?
I think the formula for guarding Giannis is pretty simple. I shouldn't say simple. Obviously, no one can stop him. But yeah. If you can slow him down, the formula has been pretty simple. It's a bigger wing or a big man that can move his feet on the ball. It's a rim protector waiting for him after. Giannis can go fast with his Euros. He can go slow with his Euro steps. He can go fast and slow with his spin moves. Everything. Like he can control the pace. And he can beat the on-ball defender by changing that pace. And then you need a rim protector there to block the shot if he does fool your on-ball defender. And then you want guys in the driving lanes, poking, reaching, grabbing, doing whatever they can to build that strong wall. So to me, I think the Celtics have Al Horford, who's defended Giannis well over the years. He's not a Giannis stopper by any stretch of the imagination, but he does a good job staying in front. So you have Al Horford on the ball. You have Robert Williams on the backside as the rim protector. And Robert Williams is, I mean, right on the borderline for all defense. That's how good he was this entire season. And then you probably have Smart, Tatum, and Brown reaching in. So to me, they have all of the pieces that you need to make Giannis struggle. Like that is a thing that they could do. But the Bucks have Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis, both of which can shoot. So is Robert Williams on Bobby or is he on Brooke? Because if he's on one of those two dudes, the Bucks are just going to station him at the 3-point line and say, okay, you want to take away the rim? That guy's going to put up 10 threes tonight, and you got to deal with it. So they have that portion of it, and I just don't – I think they have the ideal matchups, but also if the Bucks can pull Robert Williams away – you know, if they can put Grayson Allen in spots where he can get catch and shoot looks, maybe Giannis can dictate the terms in that way rather than a scorer. You know, against the Bulls, we saw him collapse their defense and create wide open looks for Grayson Allen, for Pat Connaughton, for Bobby Portis. That's how the Bucks are going to have to create shots because they don't have Middleton, who's one of their main shot creators. So it's all going to be on Giannis. I think the Celtics are pretty well suited from a personnel standpoint to defend him. But also, there are some ways that the Bucks can try to leverage their role players and leverage their other guys to make it tough on the Celtics. And I think a lot of this series comes down to how those role guys end up playing.
Which kind of leads into my next question, because with Middleton out, other players are obviously going to have to step up for the Bucks. Outside of Giannis and Drew, do you feel like there's a Bucks player that needs to have a great series in order for the Bucks to have a shot against Boston?
No, I think they can do it by committee, and that's what we've talked about in the last week with the Bucks, is that they don't really think like, hey, this is our third scorer, whether that's Grayson Allen, Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, Brooke Lopez. Like, they're not saying this guy is number three. They know that any one of those four guys could have a big game. And I think that's going to be the story of this series, is like, you're going to get a very good series from Giannis because Giannis is the best player on the planet. You're going to get a solid series from Drew. He's going to have to work really hard defensively. So maybe his offense isn't quite as good, but he'll be solid. He's one of the best two-way players on the planet. So those two are going to be solid. It's that third guy. And I think the Bucks would be in trouble if they needed one guy to be that third guy. But the fact that they have multiple guys that might be able to be the one that swings a series, I think makes it a little bit easier. It's shot creation is still going to be a big problem. You know, my favorite graph that I put together when Chris initially went out is about self-created shots and what percentage of players makes were assisted this season. If you look at Chris Middleton, it's 44%. So that means over half of his shots he created for himself, multiple dribbles, no assists. It's just him creating the shots. He also averaged 5 assists per game. So he creates a lot of shots in the Bucks offense. If you look at Pat Connaughton, that number is 90%, I believe. If you look at Grayson Allen, that number is 82%. If you look at Bobby Portis, that number is 74%. All those guys rely on other people to make shots for them. And that, to me, is going to be this whole series is, you know, can that third guy create shots, or can Giannis and Drew draw so much attention that they can create those shots for other people? Against the Bulls, I'm not going to say it was easy, but it was easy. Like, the Bulls just aren't that good. It was pretty easy for Giannis to be like, all right, I got it. I'll create the shots. We're going to be totally fine. Or Drew, or whatever it may be. Against the Celtics, that's the league's best defense. They've been the best team in the league for the last 3 months of the season. Like, that's going to be a tougher test. And I think that, to me, is like the big question for the Bucks offensively is like, okay, how are you going to replace Middleton's shot creation? Because it didn't matter against the Bulls. I think it matters a lot against the Celtics.
Okay, Eric, what's your prediction for this series?
My official prediction at The Athletic was Celtics in 7. I think this series will require the best series that Giannis has ever played. Mm-hmm. And even that might not be enough. Like, I just think with Middleton not on the floor, I've written it and tweeted it multiple times. He's one of 17 players this season to average 20 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game. There's just not a lot of people that put out that level of production. That's what you're trying to replace across 4 or 5 role players who, you know, are capable of doing that on a single night, but maybe you just don't have enough overall. So I have Celtics in 7, but I do think the Bucks have a chance because I believe in the Celtics defense. I'm not quite there on their offense. I know that I think they scored at a level that would have been the league's best rate for the final 2 months of the season. I understand that they did that, but also I watched them against the Nets and they were essentially gifted 20 free points in transition every single night. And then their half court offense was, aside from game two, when it was in the 70th percentile, it was in the 40 to 45 percentile as far as scoring efficiently in half court settings. If the Bucks can turn this into a rock fight every night, like, okay, keep it close. And then you're going to have Giannis and Drew closing versus Tatum and Brown. I mean, it's not exactly how you want it to go down. You'd love to be able to close it out before that. But if you're the Bucks and you can get it to seven coin flip games, all right, I think you can bet on the best player in the planet in that situation. It's just going to be a matter of whether or not the Bucks can get it to that spot enough times.
All right, so Eric, now we are going to do a playoff draft, which is something we did last week with Nekias Duncan. So how it works is we're going to do a snake draft, and we're going to be drafting the nine remaining playoff teams. Now, because it's a snake draft, if you pick third, you get the third and fourth pick. But it's up to you. I'm going to let you choose. Would you like the first, second, or third slot?
Wow. I'll go with the third slot.
Okay. Andrew, you picked first last time, so I'm going to give you a second this time so that I can be first. And I'm going to stick with my pick from last week. I'm going to stick with the Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
As my number one pick. I'm feeling good. I'm not really worried about them in this next series after what I've seen from Memphis and Minnesota, as entertaining as that has been. Yeah. So I feel like this is all setting up for a Golden State Phoenix series if they can get past Dallas, which is obviously the series I'm most interested in seeing. Will you be taking the other side of that series, Andrew, or are you going to go with someone in the East?
I'm going to go with Boston. I think that with Middleton out, they have a good chance to win this series and then a good chance to get to the NBA Finals. You know, I would pick Miami in the other series as well. But when it comes down to it, I trust Jason Tatum in the clutch over whoever else Miami's throwing out there. So to me, that feels more of a sure thing, because I still, like, Phoenix was my first pick last week. Yeah. And I need to see Devin Booker look like more of Devin Booker than a decoy than he was against New Orleans in that last game. If he's healthy, that changes everything for me. But like, if he's not healthy, am I surprised if Dallas wins that series? Like, probably not. So I'll stick with Boston. That's the team I feel most confident about.
Okay. So Eric, you get two picks in the third and fourth spot.
Yeah, I mean, this fell pretty much how I was hoping it was going to fall. I'm going to take both the teams that were in the NBA Finals last year. I'm going to go with the Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah. I think, you know, as I mentioned at the start of this conversation, I think this is the Eastern Conference Finals between the Bucks and the Celtics. Like, if the Celtics get through, okay, you know, there's a reason why Andrew picked him or picked the Celtics second. Like, that makes a lot of sense. But I do think if the Bucks get through this series, Middleton comes back at some point during the Eastern Conference Finals, and then all of a sudden they could go on a finals run again, repeat. And Phoenix, understand the injury with Booker and, you know, what he might look like. I've thought they were the best team in basketball the entire season, and that's not really going to change for me. The Warriors have come on strong, but I will still go on those two teams. That feels really good for me. I was hoping that this is how it was going to fall, and it fell the way that I was hoping.
Okay. My next pick, it gets tough because I guess I'll go Miami. I'll go Miami, 'cause I think they'll be in the East Finals.
Even with the injuries, with Lowry's got his hammy, Butler's got his knee inflammation.
Yeah, I'm still a believer. I'm still a believer that they'll get there. I just am extremely worried about Joel Embiid's thumb, which will require surgery. And the toughness and the physicality that the Heat play with, I think that's gonna be a chore. And then just like you have the Jimmy back in Philly stuff going. I mean, I just think that it's prime for just a Philly meltdown. I think it's going to be a really interesting series.
How dare you? I'm Doc Rivers, and I would say that is unfair to imagine my teams doing that.
How could they do that? Let me tell you about the Orlando Magic roster. That
they sucked. All those players on my team, they sucked. I hated them.
All right, I don't appreciate all of this because my next team is going to be the Sixers. Okay. Yeah, you just talked a bunch of trash on them, and what did they do? They went out in Toronto, came through in a game six. James Harden, in a closeout game, had his best game of the playoffs so far. So as bad as I was feeling about Philly like 2 days ago,
hours ago,
I have now swung all the way back around. I'm back on the bus, and I'm feeling good about Philly. And of course, I'm going to take Dallas as my next pick, which leaves you, Andrew, with the choice between, which, by the way, one of these teams might not be in the playoffs by the time this show comes out. So I think I know who you'll pick.
Yeah, we're recording on Friday morning. So I'll take Memphis. I don't particularly trust either one of these teams right now, to be honest. but if I were to put trust in any player, it would be Ja Morant after what he did at the end of that game. So I'll give the nod to the Grizzlies.
And Eric, that means you get the Wolves, who maybe they'll force a game seven tonight. It's totally believable based on how these games have gone.
Right. You know, this is a selection by default, and I'll just take it. You know, I've seen both the Grizzlies and Wolves participate in some drunk basketball, and you know, maybe that they go on the bender of a lifetime, and manage to get all the way to the finals.
Maybe the players only meeting that Karl Anthony Towns is unaware of happening is going to help them.
He did just deny that.
Did you see that? He said he doesn't. He's very confused about a players only meeting that was reported yesterday. That's the exact way that I wanted that to unfold. Is there was a players only meeting with the Wolves, and Karl Anthony Towns has no idea what we're talking about. It's just perfect. It's perfect.
You know, it's their first time, you know, making a run in the playoffs, and they're just figuring some things out. You know, how to play basketball, how to handle the media. According to Draymond Green, how to talk shit. Right. they're figuring a lot of things out during this trip.
So our playoff draft ends. I took the Golden State Warriors, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Dallas Mavericks. Andrew got Boston, Miami, and Memphis. And Eric took Phoenix, Milwaukee, and Minnesota.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
But we're not letting you go yet, Eric, because it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, which you are very familiar with. Come up with 8 questions. Now, these questions are all about Bucks playoff history, and I've tried to keep it relatively recent. So I'm not going to go too far back and ask you about Game 5 in 1971 or something. So you'll just give me a number between 1 and 8 that'll correspond to a question. If you get it right, you'll get the points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1. And we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. Where would you like to start, Eric?
7.
Question number 7. Which NBA franchise has beaten the Bucks the most number of times in the playoffs with 7 series wins against Milwaukee?
I'll go with the Boston Celtics.
That is incorrect. They did it 4 times. Andrew, do you know who's beaten the Bucks the most amount of times? Did you know that the Bucks were once in the Western Conference, by the way, which could throw you off?
Oh, I don't know if that's a hint or if that is to throw me off.
Well, we're about to find out.
About to find out. Oh, boy. Is it the Bulls?
It is not the Bulls. I think the Bulls might have been had four as well. It was the 76ers. Mm. The 76ers. Now, most of this came back in the day. Of course, there was the more recent one, the AI, you know, Game 7, that one. But yeah, no points. Okay, Andrew, you are next.
More
on
recent.
The board.
That was like a decade. That was like 20 years ago.
Well, it feels recent to me, Andrew.
Also, let's, you know, you don't have to talk about the Bucks playoff history like that. There is a large gap. So relatively recent. Like, yeah. just it's all relative.
All right, Andrew, you choose next.
Number one.
Question number one. In the Bucks' first round series against the Bulls in 2015, Giannis was ejected after charging into Mike Dunleavy Jr. on a three-point attempt and knocking him to the ground. Dunleavy Jr. was no saint, though, Andrew. Earlier in the game, he basically punched this Bucks player in the face, resulting in a trip to the locker room to check his jaw. Who was that, Andrew?
Oh, boy.
Who was the man who was punched?
A number of luminaries on that Bucks team.
Zaza? I don't remember who it was.
Zaza! No, that is incorrect. Eric, you have a chance to steal.
That was Michael Carter Williams.
That is correct. Oh, no. It was MCW. All right, Eric, you're now up. One zip.
Let's go with three.
Question number three. And by the way, I'll warn you, some of these questions this week, I think, are pretty easy, including this one. We'll see. In the 2019 Eastern Conference semis, the Bucks dropped the first game to the Celtics, prompting this ESPN analyst to declare that the series was, quote, over. The Bucks would then win in five games. Who was the analyst?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know if I know. The tough part with TV is like I'm never watching.
Sounds like a cop out.
It absolutely is. Let's go with, let's say, Jay Williams.
Jay Williams declared the series was over? No, he didn't, Andrew. You have a chance to steal.
I believe this is Paul Pierce.
That is correct. It was Paul Pierce. Okay, we are tied up. Andrew, the board is yours.
Number two.
How many Bucks have had a 40-point game in the playoffs? Now, this is one of the questions where you get to choose who answers first. So you can let Eric answer first, and then you can go higher or lower, but he might get it exactly right. Or you can guess first, and then Eric will guess higher or lower.
I'll guess.
Oh, okay. Very confident.
I don't know why.
So what is your guess? Number of Bucks with a 40-point game in the playoffs?
Five.
Andrew guesses five. Eric, would you like to go higher or lower than that?
I will go lower.
Eric goes lower. The correct answer, six. Because we had Kareem, Ray Allen, Giannis, Terry Cummings, Chris Middleton, and Michael Redd. So, Andrew, Michael, you get Redd. The points. All right. So, Andrew's up 3-1, but Eric, you have control of the board.
Let's go with number five.
Number five, my favorite question, because one of the random NBA teams I was obsessed with was the 2012-2013 Milwaukee Bucks, who were swept in the first round of the playoffs by the Miami Heat. There were 13 players who played for the Bucks, that Bucks team in the playoffs, and we're going to try to name them all. So, Eric, how this works? No. You're gonna name a player who played for the Bucks in the 2013 playoffs, and then Andrew will go back and forth until one of you stumbles. And in the hint I gave you, one of my favorite teams of all time for some reason. I love this team.
Good hint.
All right, I'll start with the prophet, Brandon Jennings.
That is correct. Andrew?
J.J. Redick.
J.J. Redick is correct. Back to Eric.
Monte Ellis.
Yes, of course, Monte. Now you're understanding why this was such a good team, why I liked it so much. Okay, Andrew, back to you.
Mike Dunleavy.
Was he a senior or junior, Andrew?
Huh?
It was Mike Dunleavy Jr. Yes. Okay.
Jr.
Correct.
A valid question. Mike Dunleavy Sr. also had a lot to do with the Bucks organization. So not crazy.
Okay, Eric, back to you. We've named Monte Ellis, Brandon Jennings, Mike Dunleavy Jr., and JJ Redick.
Luke Richard Mbamute.
Yes. Back to Andrew.
Was Irsan on this?
Of course, Irsan was on this team. Okay. Yes. Okay. Back to Eric.
Ekpe Udo.
Yes! Ekpe Udo was on this team. I'm telling you, every name on this team is a guy.
Okay, Edmond, Andrew, Oklahoma native, Ekpe Udo. Oh, boy. Was Larry Sanders on this team?
Yeah, he was. Of course he was. Larry Sanders, one of my faves. Okay, back to Eric. You guys have gotten, by the way, you've gotten eight of the 13. There's only five names left.
Oh, my God.
I was going to say, I think I've run out. I think after Larry Sanders, I think I'm done on that Bucks era.
Of the remaining names, only one is still playing in the NBA.
Ramon Sessions?
Eric, that is incorrect. Mm. The other names, Marquise Daniels, Samuel D'Alembert. Great team.
What?
John Henson, Ish Smith was on this team. And the final one, Gustavo Ayon.
Gustavo Ayon.
What a great team. Okay, Andrew, you're now up and you have, was that your question?
No, that was mine.
Oh, that was serious. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Andrew, you have control of the board.
Number four.
Question number four. Rank these three Bucks from most playoff games played to fewest playoff games played in their career, not just with the Bucks.
Okay.
Pat Connaughton, Wes Matthews, Drew Holiday.
From most to least, is that what you said?
Yes, yes, yes.
Wes, Connaughton, Drew.
Andrew, that is incorrect. Eric, you have a chance to steal.
We'll go Connaughton, Drew, Wes.
That is correct for the steal. I was kind of surprised that Pat Connaughton has played in 66 playoff games. He did like a couple with the Blazers, which helped him boost him over Drew and Wes. Hmm. Okay, we got a game on our hands because, Eric, you have control of the board. You're only down by two. Tied up here.
Let's go with six.
Okay. I forgot to mark off that. Question number six. In the 2015 first-round series against the Chicago Bulls, who hit the game-winning shot in game four to send the Bucks back to Chicago for a game five?
A delightful play call from Jason Kidd. Trigger man, Jared Dudley. A backdoor cut on MVP Derrick Rose. And that would be Jared Bayless.
Incredible memory. Wow.
Wow.
That was very impressive. And that means we have a tie game going into the final question.
Can I get some bonus points for all of that? No,
that was good. That was good.
I would, if you were down big, I would have, but I got to preserve this tie. Okay. The final question, Andrew, you're going to get the first shot at this. And I will tell you that this question is worth three possible points. So even if you get one right, Eric could still get the other two. Okay. Grayson Allen hit 6 3-pointers in game four of this first round series, a feat that has only been done by five other Bucks in the playoffs. Now, the obvious ones are Ray Allen and Chris Middleton. They've done it. They've hit 6 threes in a playoff game for the Bucks. How many of the other three can you name? So these are Bucks who hit at least 6 threes in a playoff game. I gave you two of them, Ray Allen, Chris Middleton. There's three others.
Michael Redd?
Michael Redd is incorrect, which means Eric only needs to get one correct to get the win.
Pat Connaughton did it in game five.
Eric, that is correct. And Eric wins the week 5-4. What a comeback. Down 4-1.
I got a little too cocky. There. I really thought I was going to win that.
I was very sure you were going to win that.
The other two names were Bryn Forbes and Carlos Delfino.
Ouch. I feel like Kyrie Irving at the end of game one right now. Just had my win just snatched from me. Eric, thanks so much for coming on the show. Be sure that you are following Eric Name throughout this series. Read all of his stuff on The Athletic. You can actually hear him on a podcast that I'm going to produce right after we record this. Anything is Potable. You can listen to a really fun preview of that series with the Celtics crew there, too. Eric, thanks so much, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Huge thanks to Antonio Daniels and Eric Name for joining us this week on the Saturday Slam and Jam. We have one Apple Podcast review to read this week. It comes from B-Motes. It says, great variety of shows. I love all the shows from Saturday Slam and Jam to Point of Contention and even Nerder, she wrote. All the hosts and guests have great insight and opinions on the league. Saturday Slam and Jam is my favorite because of the guest beat writers. Really gives you more clarity on the state of teams that you don't follow that closely. Ding, ding. Thanks so much for that review. If you want your review read on the show, just leave one. Make sure that you mention the Saturday Slam and Jam, and we will read it on the show. Enjoy the basketball, and we will talk to you guys again next week.